on The Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
Well, I'm delighted to welcome back to On The Bookshelf a longtime favorite on our program, William Hazelgrove, whose newest book is Morristown, The Darkest Winter of the Revolutionary War and the Plot to Kidnap George Washington. It's from Lyons Press, that's L-Y-O-N-S Press, which is an imprint of Globe Pequo, the trade division of the Roman and Littlefield Publishing Group, Inc. Well, it's always great to have you on the show, and thank you so much for making time to visit with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
A lot of times when people think about the Revolutionary War, if they are at all knowledgeable, and we have talked to you before about Revolutionary War history because we talked about Henry Knox's amazing feat of moving all the cannon from Fort Ticonderoga to George Washington when he needed it most desperately.
Yeah.
If people know anything about the Revolution, they probably know about Valley Forge and how difficult it was and the Christmas attack on Trenton and all of that. But actually, what you're saying in here is that Morristown was actually, as tough as Valley Forge was, Morristown in the winter of 1779 and 1780 was even worse, right?
Yeah. It was actually a once-in-a-century winter, which sort of is what got me intrigued about writing the book. It was incredible Arctic winter, just continual snowstorms, blizzards, incredibly low temperatures, so low that the Hudson River froze, which was like a sort of once-in-a-century occurrence. It just had not done that before. So Valley Forge was marked by a lot of starvation. Men were cold, of course. But really, Morristown was more a point where the American Army, the Revolutionary Army, was coming to pieces, was really breaking up. And they were fatigued from fighting all these years. The country was fatigued with it, too. I mean, I think I wrote in the book, they were two, like, punch-drunk fighters just sort of slugging it out, the British and the Americans. And it was sort of a waiting game, right? It was an endurance test. So, this particular winter, when George Washington goes into Morristown in New Jersey and, goes into his winter quarters, then, the weather sort of mirrored their situation. Desperate, extreme. And, of course, this would give the British an opportunity to put into play, incredibly as it sounds, a plot to kidnap George Washington.
Well, let's talk about these kidnap plots, because this is kind of an interesting thing. You don't really find this much in wars after this. But in this particular war, this is not the first time that one has been attempted, nor the first time it could have been successful, because one of the American generals who, interestingly enough, gave George Washington a lot of grief and was part of a cabal to dethrone him as the commander of the Continental Army and install himself, Charles Lee, was himself kidnapped, which was providential because it kind of got him out of Washington's hair for a while, didn't it?
Yeah, he was actually the Indians had a funny name for him, but it translated to boiling water because he was sort of apoplectic man who just believed Washington didn't know what he was doing and that he he knew best, and he basically he wanted to take over the army. And so one night he decides to, go to a house of prostitution or spend the night with a prostitute in his house. And the British find out about it, surround the house, and pull him out of the room, throw him on a horse still in his, nightshirt, and they take off with him. And, kidnapping was looked upon as a viable way to knock your opponent out of the game. It really was like sort of like chess. It was sort of like if you could get the king off the board, you were pretty good. And so both sides had plots. The British, actually, believe it or not, had a plot to kidnap Martha Washington from Mount Vernon. They were going to have a ship go up the Potomac, go up there, pluck her out of her bed and take her. And Washington was just appalled when he heard this.
Oh, yeah.
But on both sides, though, they both were continually plotting this. And the British, you know, sort of saw if they could ever get Washington, and they are wrong in this thought, that would end the revolution, that he was the spiritual, physical leader of the American Revolution. Without him, it would fold. And I think they were right that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, if something had happened to Washington, which is, again, another providential thing, there was that Washington, being in the thick of battle time and time again, in the French and Indian War, and then in the American Revolution, never once is hit by a bullet. His uniform gets pierced more than one time, but he is never injured by cannon fire or by bullets in either of those two wars, which is relatively extraordinary.
Yeah, he had, sort of like Teddy Roosevelt had, this incredible ability to be in very dangerous situations and not get killed. And I think he sees in history a lot where these men who come down to us through history seem divinely protected. Certainly there's a thing called fate. I truly believe this after, kind of writing 10 different narrative nonfiction books. Wilbur Wright, Teddy Roosevelt, you just start going through these people, Henry Knox, and George Washington, they seem to have the ability to survive situations that most people wouldn't. And you're right, I mean, Washington would go into battle on his big white horse, and bullets would be zinging all around him, and he'd come out without a scratch. It was sort of amazing. And so the thought was, if you could ever get Washington, you had the war.
Yeah.
So this was I think, one of the driving forces of this whole plot.
Now, this is not the only thing with which Washington is dealing at this point either. The incredible suffering that his army is enduring at Morristown in the winter of 1779 and 1780. It's, as you mentioned, it's so insanely cold, the Hudson River freezes over, which no one had ever seen happen, which gives the British a chance to do something incredible and extraordinarily revolutionary, if you will, the idea of taking a regular army, or at least a band of highly trained, we might say, commandos, across the ice to capture Washington. And it got pretty close to being successful. That's one of the things that Washington had to deal with. And I suppose, is that fair to go ahead and say, tell us about the plot to get Washington, or do you want to...
Yeah, I think we should just sort of dive right into it.
Okay.
This guy named General Simcoe, he's a British general, and he believes that Washington, the Patriots, the American soldiers, he sees them as just these rebels, this rabble. He thinks it's absurd that, that he's having to come over and fight them, and that he doesn't regard them as even soldiers. But anyway, he gets captured. In his mind, he's ill-treated. He gets thrown into a common jail with a drunkard, and he writes letters to everybody, including Washington, saying, you know what? I feel highly insulted. You let me out. This is ridiculous. I'm a British officer. And Washington doesn't respond. And he takes this as a great affront. And then they try and trade him off, for some prisoners, right? Some British prisoners. And American prisoners, sort of a swap. And the American prisoners are too low rank for him. And he refuses. He feels they should be generals for generals, So, Simcoe really has a very high bar of the way he thinks warfare should be conducted. In his mind, he's been insulted greatly. So he does get out of jail. They let him go. And he hatches this plot. It's really him. Now, he heads up the Queen's Rangers. And the Queen's Rangers are sort of their SEAL team of the time. They ride on horses. They have these short carbines. They're very sort of hit and run kind of force. And so he goes out to the Hudson, and he realizes that with this freezing. Okay, so now the British are in New York. Washington's up in Morristown, which is about 30 miles up from the Hudson. Okay, he's in winter camp. And as you said, it's a hard winter camp. they create what's called Log City. It's 1,000 log huts that his troops are in. Washington stays at the Ford Mansion, which is much nicer, but still it's pretty cold. Mrs. Ford is there. It's not great. It's his headquarters. But it's a few miles away from his troops, and spies let the British know that. So Simcoe hatches a plan where he and the Queen's Rangers are going to dash across the Hudson, because now it's no longer a moat, it's a bridge. They're going to dash across the Hudson, ride like heck all the way up to the mansion in the middle of the night, go up there, and they know Washington is asleep on the second floor bedroom in the back, and pull him out of his bed, throw him on a horse, and then gallop all the way back to the Hudson before the Americans know what hit him and get across and take him to New York, and then basically, you know, sue for peace, saying, we've got your man, you're done. And this is the plan. And you know, Simcoe works it out, but he has to take it to his superiors. So he takes it, you know, up the line, and like a lot of times people go, oh, that's a great idea. We're going to take it. So then the British take it from Simcoe, basically, and create an elaborate expedition with 500 men, two diversionary forces, and they're going to use German mercenaries called the Black Hussars, who are really these brutal mercenaries who, you know, have death or glory on their caps. They, you know, they're known for just raping and pillaging, and they're going to be the actual force that goes up to Washington's mansion. Simcoe gets relegated to being a diversionary force, which he doesn't like at all, but he figures, what the heck, I'll get my revenge. So this is really how it comes about.
Now, we're talking, in case you're just joining us, to William Hazelgrove, who is the author of Morristown, The Darkest Winter of the Revolutionary War and the Plot to Kidnap George Washington. It's from Lyons Press, L-Y-O-N-S Press. The plot, it seems to be pretty well thought out. They have the opportunity because of the Hudson freezing, and certainly they are absolutely determined. And of course, Simcoe is not the only one who is snobbish enough to think that George Washington is beneath him, and that he's somebody special, and that therefore, how dare they rebel against the mother country, and blah blah blah. It actually begins to look like it's going to be successful, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they have good spies. They know exactly. Now, Washington has what's called a lifeguard unit. This is his Secret Service. These are handpicked men that are, you know, big, and they're always with him. And so he gets a letter, actually, from another general saying, we think there is an expedition to kidnap you. And Washington says in a little return letter, that's ridiculous. I have the lifeguard unit. And he also thinks, you know, the snow is so deep, you know, who would come out in this? And he sort of just pushes to the side, even though there was a plot to assassinate him, you know, a few years before in New York that almost came off. So he actually is in danger, but Washington's approach is to never show that he's rattled, ever. Because if he shows it, then other people are going to get rattled. So he just sort of dismisses it. But the British are deadly earnest, and they, you know, commence their plan. And basically, it's they gallop across the frozen Hudson. The two diversionary forces take off. And basically, all they're doing is going up there, doing a quick attack, and then coming back to the Hudson and pulling Americans with them, thinking, oh, the British are attacking here, while the Black Hussars, this, you know, super elite, ruthless German mercenary force, you know, jets up toward the mansion, the Ford Mansion, to grab Washington. So everything's going to plan. And you know, the diversionary forces do their jobs magnificently. The Americans are sucked into thinking the British are attacking these two other places, but the very thing that's allowing them to pull this off, if you will, because of this weather, is going to stop them. So they get within miles of Washington's mansion, and what happens is horses have forelocks. That's where the leg bends right before the, you know, the hoof.
Right.
And the snow has come down. It warms up. It turns to rain, and then it drops. The temperature drops brutally. And what's that do? That puts a crust of ice across the top of the snow that's like a knife. So the horses break through, and it cuts their forelocks.
Hmm.
Soon these horses are bleeding like crazy. And this actually stops this Black Hussar, this force of men, who's going to grab Washington. They can go no further. So they have rockets, and they send off these rockets signaling that they have to turn back. And they do. And this is really the only thing that probably kept Washington alive, you know, or kidnapped, you know, into the, you know, taken by the British, is the weather did save him ultimately at the end, because nobody really knew that this was coming. I mean, the Americans had been pretty bamboozled. The plan was to go up there and, you know, kill the life force, the lifeguard soldiers in the house. They knew exactly where they were. They're going to kill them, you know, cut their throat, go in, grab him, come out, take off, before the main force of the Americans could mobilize. And again, they knew they were a couple of miles away and come down the road and you know, save Washington. So they had thought it out. It was all set. They were all set to pull this off.
While all this is going on, men are freezing to death at Morristown, in even in their log cabins. There's no money for anything. There had been a good harvest that past fall, but the farmers in the area have gotten pretty jaded about selling their stuff to the Americans, because, you know, they're countrymen, because the Continental wasn't worth a Continental.
It really wasn't. Their currency was so worthless that if you had a wheelbarrow of the currency, the wheelbarrow was worth more.
Hmm.
And so these farmers, and this is one reason the American soldiers were so mad, there was food all around them in the farms. The farmers just didn't want to give it to them. They wanted to sell it to what's called the London market.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a way for the Americans to sell their food to the British and get gold.
Mm-hmm.
And not have to deal with this currency that was worthless.
Right.
And Washington was well aware that his fortune was just slipping away. That this baseless currency was, you know, going to make him broke. And he writes about this too. So not only are they freezing, and they are, not only do they not have food, they have none. They're barely clothed. They're in these smoky cabins, 8 men to a cabin. It turns into like a smoky hell, really. And you know, they know that the American public's pretty much forgotten them.
Yeah.
By the way, most Americans at this point, half of them thought they were going to lose.
Yeah.
There were people betting on both sides. Of course, Benedict Arnold being the most famous of the bettors.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about him. But, you know, and Americans were sick of the war, and they didn't see why they should pay any money toward it.
Yeah.
So Washington and his men really were sort of like the forsaken stepless, you know, child. The child left out, or, you know, the poor country cousin, where everybody sort of moved on, but they're all, you know, sacrificing their lives and going through hardship. So this creates incredible morale problems and eventually leads to a mutiny.
Yeah, and desertions, constant desertions. The army starts out with 10,000 or so by the time they go into winter camp, and they'll lose a pretty good percentage during that terrible, terrible winter.
Exactly.
There are some other things that you bring out about, boy, this was a really tough time. George Washington was so thrilled a couple of years earlier when the French came in publicly on the side of the United States of America. But since then, they hadn't done anything much. George Washington makes plans based on the idea that he'll have soldiers and money and weapons and ships. And then they say, oh, well, it's getting cold. Let's go to Barbados for the winter. Or, you know, we'll go to the Caribbean, and we'll be back in 6 months or so, okay?
That's exactly right.
You know, he gets very frustrated with his allies because they don't seem to be doing anything to really help him.
No, the French have done nothing. and Washington was very excited about them coming in. And, you know, so he realizes basically they're on their own. And during all this, as this is going on, Benedict Arnold decides to make his play. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sort of hard to believe that all this could go happen at once, but it did. Benedict Arnold is he's a perfect example of the way a lot of people are feeling. He felt ill-used. He felt he had lost a lot of money. He had a bad leg from wounds. He felt like the Americans were going to lose. And he had this wife, Peggy Shipley, he had married, who expected a very high lifestyle. He didn't have the money for it. And she's saying to him, look, you need to get something out of this. And in her, you know, she comes from a wealthy family who has very good relations with the British. And so she actually sets up a meeting where basically Benedict Arnold says, all right, for $10,000, I'll give you West Point, the fort on the Hudson. And the British are like, okay. And so this is going on simultaneously with the kidnapping, with the men, you know, in these horrible situations. And Benedict Arnold has it all planned. He's going to give them the fort. He's going to get the money. He and his wife are then going to go to Britain and live. And, you know, in his mind, he's done his part for the revolution. He thinks Americans are going to lose anyway. He rationalizes in his mind he's kind of doing America a favor by hastening the end of the war, by giving this fort to the British. And, you know, Washington's sort of being boxed in. He has Benedict Arnold turning against him. And by the way, if you control the Hudson, you really control this war, because that's the main artery. And it would, and this is where goods go up and down, and it would really bisect the the Americans, you know, the colonies. It would just go right down the middle. And so this was a very big deal to the British, and you know they really wanted to get that fort. So, you know, Washington has basically everything going against him.
Yeah. And yet, amazingly enough, things start turning around, and Lafayette shows up in May. They've been in winter camp for, what, at least a half a year at this point, right? Maybe, what, 7 or 8 months they've been at Morristown?
Yeah. And by the way, Benedict Arnold is revealed. At the last minute, a British spy is caught. Andre is caught with plans from West Point, the fort, in the heel of his boot by the Americans. And so the plot comes up. They realize that Benedict Arnold's in on it, and Benedict Arnold flees and, you know, runs away and gets onto a British ship. And his wife then follows him. But, you know, this is at the last moment Washington uncovers this.
Yeah. So, it's another providential thing, isn't it?
Another little crazy
thing happened, and Andre gets caught, and the whole plot just falls apart, boom, and everything changes again.
Exactly. Everything changes again. And then, of course, you know, in the book, we can't go into this too much, I know, but in the book, the British then move against Washington at Morristown in a full-scale battle. They're like, okay, we've had it. General Clinton's like, you know what, I'm just going to move against them. But he's down in Savannah, and his general under him goes and attacks. Clinton comes up, but then he gets word of Benedict Arnold's plan, and this is the strangest thing in the world. So basically, the British are pushing Washington back. I mean, Washington's men are decimated. Half the force is gone. They're weak. And so the British are using a pincer movement. They're going to basically crush Washington. And then General Clinton hears about Benedict Arnold giving them the fort on Hudson, West Point. And he goes, you know what, that's a better thing. And he pulls them back at the last minute.
Yeah.
And if they hadn't, Washington would have been crushed. Yep. So in the strangest way, Benedict Arnold was the best traitor we ever had because he suckered the British in, you know, to thinking that this was going to be their answer to knock out the Americans, and then that fell apart.
Yeah, yeah. If he'd really played his hand right, he could have made it look, after it was all over, like, oh, that was my plot all along. It was a secret thing between me and George. You know, it's cool.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. But it just fell apart. And then again, you know, Washington lived to fight another day.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, a year and a half later, he manages to corral Cornwallis at Yorktown, and all of a sudden, essentially over. I mean, there's partisan fighting for another almost 2 years while they're hammering out the details, but essentially, after October of 1781, the war is essentially won by these upstart Americans.
That's right. And, you know, and really what it comes down to, Washington understood one thing, and, you know, sort of the lesson we learned in Vietnam, that if he could just endure, if he could just avoid a full-on confrontation with the British, they would get tired of it. And they did. I mean, think about it. They had to bring all these men and material across the ocean. And then they got this immense country that just dwarfs Europe, right?
Yeah.
And the Americans don't fight like they're supposed to, where you line up and shoot at each other. The Americans are all great shots. They line up behind trees, rocks, anything, pick off the British, and then disappear into the forest.
Right.
You know, the British didn't know how to fight that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so he was very wily. You know, he was smart enough to know that he could just wait them out, and he did.
And he did. Well, it's an extraordinary story, and I'll be honest with you, I've read a lot of books about the American Revolution, but none of them really went into anywhere close to the detail that you did. And to bring out this idea that Morristown was really the time that tried men's souls, even more so than Valley Forge 3 years earlier.
That's what hit me when I started reading about it. I didn't know anything about Morristown. I didn't know, you know, anything about him going into this winter camp and how brutal it was in this extreme winter. And then, you know, I discovered the kidnapping plot. And by the way, the kidnapping plot was never really written about because the British wanted to sort of push it down after, you know, we became allies and Washington was deified. It was really General Simcoe. He's the one who wrote about it. He wrote about it in a book. But then it just sort of disappeared from history. And it's just one of these strange sideshows that could have changed the war.
Well, that's what I like about your books. And I'll list them all when we're finished. But we've had the privilege of talking to you about every single one of them, and all of them are about things that are relatively known, but there are a great amount of details that have never been written by anybody else, and you are doing that. And so that's why I'm always enthusiastic when I hear you've got another book out, and always enjoy reading it and enjoy getting a chance to talk to you and share your book with our listeners. And so thank you. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Oh, no, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And once again, his website is simple, williamhazelgrove.com. And lots of great books that you can find. His most recent is Morristown, The Darkest Winter of the Revolutionary War and the Plot to Kidnap George Washington. It's from Lions Press, and it's available online and in bookstores everywhere. Will, thank you very much again for making time to talk to us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
William Hazelgrove is the national best-selling author of 10 novels and 9 narrative nonfiction books, and we have had the privilege of interviewing him for all of those: Madam President, The Secret Presidency of Edith Wilson, Forging a President, How the Wild West Created Teddy Roosevelt, Al Capone and the 1933 World's Fair, Wright Brothers, Wrong Story, Henry Knox's Noble Train, which was the winner of the Society of Colonial Wars Book Award, Sally Rand, American Sex Symbol, which is kind of a sequel to the 1933 World's Fair book, and 160 Minutes, The Race to Save the RMS Titanic, and his newest book, Morristown, The Darkest Winter of the Revolutionary War and the Plot to Kidnap George Washington. It's in hardcover from Lions Press. His books have been Book of the Month Club Selections, History Book Club Selections, Junior Library Guild Selections, and Literary Guild Selections, and have been optioned for the movies. He was an Ernest Hemingway writer in residence, has written articles for Smithsonian Magazine and USA Today, been on NPR's All Things Considered, and this is about his 9th time to be on the bookshelf. Thanks so much for joining us today. What a great way to start off American History Month. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and podcast. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.